you need to talk, let us help you.
Such an observant, considerate boy. You would think he truly cares.
Slade, look what hell just spit up. Stay back. Let me guess. They got you to a Lazarus pit just in time.
Yes, I've been bathing in it quite a bit lately. You might say it's addictive. Improves muscle tone, too. Losing your edge. Your friends have made you soft.
Betrayed us. Why?
Betrayed? That assumes I was ever on your side in the first place.
Welcome to the Superhero Cinephiles podcast. I'm your host, Barry Constantine, and welcoming a new guest, and that is Kenesha Liu. Kenesha, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Little bit sleep deprived. My daughter decided to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and decided that she wanted to play. So, but other than that, I'm fine.
That's nice. I can't relate yet. I don't have kids, but yeah, that's rough and a little bit adorable.
It is. Yeah. And she can't read yet, but she likes to hold the book open and babble. So she, because she thinks she's reading.
Mm-hmm.
So she wanted to do that while I'm trying to sleep. So anyway, why don't you tell the guests, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So my name is Kenesha, and I've always loved comic books. So when I was a kid, like, I had an older brother. He's like 6 years older than me. And I think that was really what got me into it. That and a mixture of just like Cartoon Network in general. Like, I would say like my childhood is watching Teen Titans and like Justice League, the animated series and all that. And before like anime was cool, because I was like kind of more into like anime and like manga, but then it wasn't like the cooler of the two. So I think I like kind of like transitioned more into like, you know, watching more like TV shows and getting into the comic books. And my brother, like, you know, he's like a huge fan. Like, he has stacks and stacks and the, you know, the sleeves to make sure they're in perfect condition. He's always like, we need to get the first edition or like, you know, so that's kind of where I got into comic books, was definitely my brother's influence. I would say that I'm definitely more of a DC fan than Marvel, which nowadays is a little bit controversial. I'm not going to defend like the DC films besides like, I mean, some of them I think are great. But, you know, like, I'm not like a diehard in the sense that I'm going to like defend anything that they do, but they have my heart. They have my childhood. And I think that's their characters. I like the grittiness and the darkness of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's whatever you get started off with, that's kind of like what your tribe gets established with going forward. Because I mean, Superman and Batman were my first superheroes, but the one that really kind of caught me, and as far as the comics go, was the X-Men and Marvel. So that's still where my interests kind of gravitate towards, although I do like a lot of DC stuff as well. And it's been interesting because up until recently, if you would have asked me, you know, which is better, Marvel or DC in the outside of the comics medium, I would say Marvel's better at the movies, DC's better at TV, because the Arrowverse stuff was great for, I've kind of fallen off on it. Like season 7 of The Flash was kind of a slog to get through. And then I'm like a third of the way into the last season of Supergirl and just not feeling the drive to go beyond that. I started watching the latest season of The Flash is now on Netflix, and I started watching the first episode last night, and that was not bad. So I think it might be
good.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I mean, I'll have to keep going to see how it goes, but
yeah.
And I love Superman and Lois. Like that's
heard that one's good.
It's so good. It's so good. I'm getting so impatient waiting for season two to come on HBO Max.
See, I think, so like for me, I love the, like Marvel for me is like X-Men and Spider-Man. Like they have my heart because I feel you. Also like when the Avengers came out, I was like, who are these people, you know, because like in the comic books, I mean, like I knew who they were, but it was like Fantastic Four, like X-Men, Spider-Man, like those were the heavy hitters,
right?
I never expected the movies to like take off the way they did, but in terms of like Arrowverse, like I was a huge fan of them, but I feel like I don't even remember what season it was. I think it was like 5 at least of Arrow that I dropped off, and I felt like some of the quality of the show kind of lost me. So it's good to know. I've heard that Superman is good. So it's good to know that that one's good. I'll like watch that one, but.
Yeah, that is, it's really good. And it's kind of disconnected from the rest of it. So I think that helps it a lot too, because it's really, I mean, just like the character stuff alone is just so good. I was nervous about it going in because, you know, they got 2 teenage sons on it. So I'm like, oh, okay, they're going to do the whole CW teen angst stuff. And there's a little bit of that, but not as much as I would have expected.
You would expect.
Yeah.
From like, I think the Batwoman TV show was really what killed my like Arrowverse. Like I used to watch all of the shows, but like I'm a huge Batwoman fan. Like I love the Elegy like series in the comic books. Like I think it was done so right. I love that character. And then I mean, to be fair, I didn't give it a chance. Like I didn't even watch it. But it was like the reviews that I got back, I was like, I don't know that I want to.
Yeah, I watched the first few episodes on HBO Max.
Okay, thoughts?
And I'm just like, it didn't impress me. I'm not gonna go as far as say it was terrible or anything like that, but it was like there wasn't anything offensively bad about it or anything like that, but it just didn't do much for me.
Okay, that's fair.
But it's for the other DC stuff, like I hate the Snyder stuff, but everything else, you know, I loved Aquaman. I don't think it should have been called Birds of Prey, I thought Birds of Prey was a lot of fun.
I agree.
I, you know, Shazam was, you know, such a joy to watch, and first Wonder Woman 84 not so much.
Yeah,
but like there are other TV stuff, like I love Titans on HBO Max. I love Doom Patrol, I haven't seen Stargirl yet, but I hear that's pretty good too.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. Have you ever seen Constantine?
Yes. Oh God, I love Constantine.
That show.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like in Legends of Tomorrow, which is actually pretty fun after the first season, in my opinion. And I really like the Constantine show, and I wish they would have kept on going with that. But
yeah, I kept hoping they would do like a revival on HBO Max, but it just never came about. And now they're going to be recasting the part for a new franchise. So that's the rumor, that nothing's been like confirmed yet, but that's kind of like the rumor that's been going around for about a few years now.
It's interesting though for me, like having like TV actors and movie actors in the same role. Like I understand it, but it is kind of weird to have, like, you know, for example, like two Flashes with like
Grant
and Ezra. So
although at this point I think we pretty much only have one Flash.
Yeah. Like we don't talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't talk about Kevin.
but anyway, today we're talking about and you mentioned that you got in through Teen Titans, so this is a fitting choice you picked, and that's Teen Titans, the Judas Contract animated movie from 2017, directed by Sam Liu, which I've got to wonder what this guy does to every other animation director, because it seems like he does every single DC movie.
Yeah, that's very fair. I don't know that I've seen an animated movie that doesn't have him as the director.
I think Jay Oliva did a few of them, but a lot of them, it's like Sam Liu does like everything. And it makes me wonder, like, I'm kind of worried about running into him in a dark alley or something.
There's like multiple like Sam Liu's.
It's
like a bunch of people. That'd be funny. what were you gonna say?
No, I was gonna say, because this is, you know, it's an adaptation of probably one of the most famous Teen Titans stories in the comics. And then that was kind of retrofitted to fit into this New 52 style animated universe they were doing for a while. And they'd done this with a few things. They'd done this with Hush. They'd done this with the Death and Return of Superman. The Justice League stuff and all that was based off the New 52 stuff. So the Son of Batman and all, and the Court of Owl stuff, all this kind of stuff. They took these, which was kind of different from what they had been doing, because around the, I want to say early 2000s or so, they were doing like direct adaptations of a lot of these big storylines like Dark Knight Returns, All-Star Superman. And then now they decided we're going to take those storylines and we're still going to do that, but we're going to kind of retrofit it into this shared universe thing, which I think has had mixed results when you look at it overall. Some of them I think have been really good, others, you know, not as great. But one of the things I do miss that they did before this was when they tried to match the art style of the storyline with the animation. So like Dark Knight Returns looks like a Frank Miller comic, All-Star Superman looks like Frank Quitely and all that kind of stuff. But what were some of your thoughts about this, rewatching it, or also like, are you very familiar with the original comic story too?
I've seen like panels, so I haven't, I think the comics is like from the 80s, right? That story. So it's old, which is nothing wrong with old things, but like, I haven't read the thing in completion, but I do know the story. So like you were saying, like they definitely switched up things, like for example, like the team is different. And I actually like some aspects of that. Like, I'm not the biggest Blue Beetle fan, but I do love Damian, and I love having him there. And so I think that they did a pretty good job of like keeping the story pretty similar to the source material. But, you know, I think a lot of the source material had like things that were very in continuity at that time. So it wouldn't really make sense for them to bring it into the movie. So I understand why certain things weren't there. Like, for example, like, you know, I think you're right. Like, it's hit or miss. Like, I was thinking about Deathstroke's like family being very involved in the original comic, and here it's like Jericho is like oddly in it.
That was such a weird thing. Yeah. Jericho's this, he's this random cult member who gets experimented on. And I'm watching, I'm like, that guy looks like Jericho.
And then
you get a post-credit scene where he opens his eyes and he's got the power signature. I'm like,
yeah.
Why did you do that?
No, I completely thought the same thing. I was like watching and I was like, that looks like him. Maybe it's like, you know, like a weird joke that it looks like him, but there's no way it's him. And then I was looking at I looked it up on Wikipedia and they were like, yeah, that's Jericho. I was like, very random.
Yeah. And I think the fact that they had to retrofit this into that existing universe kind of hampers it in a lot of ways. Like, with the Damian part, Damian as a character. But I think in these movies they didn't quite find the right way to capture him, because it's a fine line with that character. It's a very delicate balancing act, because he could very easily come off as just a petulant, annoying brat, which I think he does more often than not in these
movies. Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm not the biggest fan of, I thought it was okay in Son of Batman, but after all these movies now, after, you know, Batman versus Robin and the first Teen Titans movie, and at this point, I'm just kind of like, all right, it's getting a little bit old now.
Okay. I think for me, like, I think one of my biggest issues with Deathstroke's like motivations to me
that
were a little
too strange. Yeah,
like I didn't like that he was like mad about the League of Assassins. Like, I was like, I feel like he's not, like, you know, I very much think of him as like a loner character, so I'm like, I don't even know why you care about this.
But that was another weird thing they put in Son of Batman, where they made him a member of the League of Assassins, and then trying to work that in here, that motivation definitely it felt really weird. It's just like, you're mad because you're not the heir of the League of Assassins was the one who got picked, which you knew anyway. That felt like it felt really forced to me.
Yeah. But I'm glad it wasn't like a huge thing. The reason why I like Damian might be because like in the later movies, like him and Raven, I thought had a fun dynamic and they end up kind of being a couple, which wouldn't really be my first choice, because, you know, usually it's like Beast Boy and Raven.
Right.
And I also did like the bits and pieces of seeing like Damian hang out with Dick. Like, it was very short. I think there was only like maybe one or two scenes, but like, you know, like I feel like Dick Grayson is very much like the heart of the Bat family. You know, like, mm-hmm. I I think he's very well-rounded. You know, he's not like the best detective, or like, he's not like maybe the number one fighter in the family, but I think he is very well-rounded and is like the heart. He's like the human, the most human out of all of them. And so I always love seeing his interactions, especially with Damien. So I think that's kind of, I liked it. I don't know. I don't know if that's an unpopular opinion or anything.
No, I don't know. I think that's fine. I thought Dick was really good. I mean, I think Dick is, him and Wally West are really interesting, because they're like the two characters that have the most connections and are probably the most well-liked in the DC universe of all the superheroes. Cause you've got like, you know, Superman, everybody just kind of like looks up to him. You got Batman, everyone's kind of just a little bit standoffish towards him, but like Dick and Wally, like, everybody loves them. Everybody knows them. They knew them growing up as kids. So even like the adults have this kind of respect for them. The younger heroes, they kind of look up to them too. But they've always been more approachable than like your Supermans or your Batmans.
Yeah, for sure. And I liked the way that they depicted his relationship with Starfire. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that they started it off with him meeting her. Like, I feel like she was very much like his like awakening in a sense. And so I like that they started off with that. And they had a very like subtle problem where, like, you know, I think she kind of felt like he was like undercutting her like leadership. Mm-hmm. But I thought that they like managed it really well. And it was like a really good depiction of the relationship. So I was a fan of that.
I like that too. It didn't feel, sometimes when you have that kind of situation where, you know, the new leader feels undermined by the old leader, it can sometimes come off as forced.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a really good job of striking that balance with it. And it did feel like, you know, Dick wasn't doing it on purpose. He was just kind of like, it was just his presence. And because everybody looks up to him, that he just kind of slipped into that role unconsciously. And I thought, and Corey's reaction to it was a lot of sense. Like, she didn't flip out and, you know, go insane about it, but she was also, she's like, you know what, this is kind of bugging me. And I liked that it was a pretty mature way of handling that.
Yeah, and I thought that they did her characterization right. I think, like, you know, she is, so, like, you know, I feel like a lot of times in comic books, like, a lot of female characters get sexualized, and, like, I don't like it with all characters, because I feel like, first off, that doesn't even make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But with, like, Corey, I feel like she's kind of, like, that's, like, her thing. Like, she's just, like, sexy on accident, and she's, like, an alien, and, like, it's, like, hot, but, like, it's, like, innocent at the same time. And I thought they did a really good job of, like, capturing, like, her maturity and intelligence with her, like, fun lovingness and, like, innocence. Like, I thought they did a great job with that.
Yeah, and I think, and you probably know more than I do, because I'm not as familiar with the Teen Titans in the comics, but as I recall, Tamaran is kind of a much more sexually progressive culture, and, you know, much more sexually liberated. So she doesn't have a lot of the hangups about sexuality that people in a Western society would have.
Yeah. I mean, she literally learns languages by like kissing people.
Right. So, yeah.
Like, that, you know, sums up her character in a nutshell.
The weird thing though about that scene is even though I like that scene when she comes in, it does feel kind of disconnected from the rest of the movie. Like, and I think this is kind of the fault of, I feel like we should have had another movie before this one, before they jumped into the Judas contract, because it feels like there's a lot of stuff in that first scene where, and a lot of stuff with Tara too, which I'm going to talk about later, where it feels like this is stuff that should have been set up in another movie that then leads into the Judas contract. Because as it stands, it just kind of feels like, oh, we have to introduce these characters and get them in so people can understand this story.
Yeah, I think I totally get what you're saying. I think one thing was, like, for example, they had to like really get the team dynamics like clear. Uh-huh. So there was like a lot of dialogue like dedicated to that. But I think because of that, the villains kind of suffer. Like, for example, like Brother Blood is like very much this like mustache twirling like guy. Right. It's like, you know, like, and even like Deathstroke, who's a great character, I think they could have done more with like understanding him and like, you know, like, because he's a very complex character. There's definitely more to him than just being like, ah, like, Damien, you suck. Like, I should have been there, you know?
Another thing, too, is, and this might just be my personal bias because I'm a Tim Drake guy, but I really found myself wishing that it was Tim Drake instead of Damien as Robin. Because I think especially with, like, uncovering Tara's deception and all that kind of stuff, I feel like if you had Tim in that role, it would have made a much more sense, because Tim is more of the detective type.
Yeah, he definitely is. I feel like he's not given that much love.
No, no. It's a tragedy. it feels because they just kind of like skipped over him in a lot of these animated movies where they gave, you know, Dick his due as Nightwing. They had you know, Jason as, you know, the Red Hood stuff, and they covered that. But Tim like has just seems to get overshadowed so much. Even when he was in like Batman the Animated Series, he was basically Jason Todd, but with Tim Drake's name as far as like personality and origin and all that. And even in, I know he's in Young Justice, but he feels like he's such a background player in Young Justice too.
I think like it's because his shtick is being the detective. And I guess, I don't know, maybe it's like a lot more effort to have like a story that surrounds detective work. And if they did have that, like he'd have to be like the sole player, cause he's the one who's figuring out he's, you know, supposedly smarter than Batman or whatever. Like, you know, he always says that he's a great detective. So I think that's maybe why he gets undercut. I don't even think that people know that he is supposed to be, you know, like the detective. I think people know that, you know, Todd's like angry, and then like Damian's like the kind of like spoiled, you know, brat or whatever. But like, I feel like people don't know, you know, who Tim is. And it's partially because he doesn't get enough screen.
Yeah. I mean, I will say his in Titans season 3 of Titans, they brought him in and,
Oh, did they?
Yeah, yeah. It was an interesting depiction in there. Like he came from a more working class background, but they definitely got the intelligence and the detective aspect down on that. So I thought that was pretty a pretty good way of doing that. I will say too that Tara, this is another thing where it feels like Tara's betrayal is. And I know it's a famous story. Most people who are at least a little bit familiar with this story, like even me, I've never read the original Judas Contract story, but I know enough about it to know that Tara is the one who betrays the team. That being said, I feel like if you're going to do this and you're going to have the whole betrayal aspect, you should at least work for it. And I feel like it's taken as a given right from the start that, oh, obviously she's the one who's going to betray the team. Right. Because she's got this kind of animosity with everyone. She feels kind of like an outsider from the jump. And so when she does betray everybody, it's like, even if you know nothing about the Teen Titans, I think you would have been like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, well, first off, I have to give kudos to Christina Ricci, which I didn't even know was the person who voiced her. I thought she did a really good job voicing her. So, shout out Christina Ricci. But in terms of Tara, like I, at the start, when I first watched it, I wasn't sure that I liked it because I felt like she was unlikable from the jump. But I think that they did a pretty good job with the amount of time that they had. And I liked it more than some other iterations of Tara that I've seen. So I think my favorite will be from the original Teen Titans show, because she's much more sympathetic in there and you understand her, I think, more, and you're kind of rooting for her. The comic books, they make her way more evil and crazy. So I don't love that version of her. And I think that this one was a little bit more in the middle, where it's like, she is kind of a jerk, just that's the way she is, but they give her an interesting backstory where you kind of get where she's coming from, and you can kind of see like the seeds of guilt, you know, when she's like hanging out with the team. I liked the birthday party. I thought that was really cute. So it was like, I'll give it like a B, like a solid B, I think, in terms of like how they adapted that.
This is another thing where I feel like we needed another movie to introduce her. Like, I think if you needed another movie where you introduced Tara, where you introduced, I'm not sure, was Starfire in the last Teen Titans movie? I can't recall.
I think she was.
Okay.
But quote me on that.
But still, I think we should have had another movie to better establish the Corey Dick relationship, and like some sort of like passing of the torch from Dick to Corey officially. And then that would have been a good lead in for this. As it stands, I feel like a lot of this is just kind of like the characters are like this because they have to be like this for the story, and they're not setting things up properly. And that was kind of the problem I had with a lot of the, Snyder stuff, and is like things happen because they're supposed to happen, and it's not so much focused on why it happens.
Yeah. I think a lot of the DC, sometimes I think DC just feels like they're trying to play catch up to Marvel, especially Yeah, more so in the, you know, actual films. But I think like this would be a great like TV show. I think if they established the Judas Contract as like a show, I think that would work really, really well, because you like understand, you know, the dynamics way better, and like you feel for each character. But I think they crammed a lot into 80 minutes. I don't think it was horribly done, but like you were saying, like it definitely could have, they would have paid off more with more time for the characters. Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing that's, you know, bad about it. It's not like nothing like that, but it is, there's a lot of places where I found myself thinking like, and I think this, when I start rewriting the movie as I'm watching it, that that just shows there's some weaknesses in the script. It's not that the script is bad, but it's just, there are definite parts where I would have tweaked this. I would have tweaked that. I would have really, they needed another movie before this. I think that's really the biggest sin of this movie, is that they felt like they had to adapt this classic storyline. And then after the decision was made to adapt the storyline, then they're kind of like, okay, well, how do we fit all this other stuff together?
Right. I feel like one thing though is like, you can't talk about Tara without talking about her interesting relationship with Destro.
That's another thing too. I mean, if you're going, because that is such a controversial thing to bring in, and even like it, and that's something that has not aged well at all in the comics, and it's something that's still criticized this day, to the point where I believe even Christopher Priest in his Deathstroke comic, he felt he had to address it in some way.
What did he do?
I'm not sure exactly. I just remember reading something, a news article about it or something. Yeah. I think it was Priest who would address it, or some writer had felt like the need to kind of address it recently. And it's a valid point. I mean, so I feel like if you're going to do this storyline, why would you do it that way, where you're bringing in that really creepy aspect of it? And it's just because in the original storyline, if I'm not mistaken, the whole reason Deathstroke is taking out the contract on the Titans is because of anger over their involvement with his family, right?
Yeah, I believe the death of his son, like, I don't even think it was their fault, but I think he blames them.
Right, and that's a really personal, understandable motivation. Whereas here, it's just like, I want to kill this kid because he stole something that I felt was mine. And, oh, by the way, I've got this teenage girl that I'm seducing, and I'm old enough to be your grandpa.
It was so weird. And like, also the scene that she cut, like that they reveal that they're even gonna do that, is like, it reminds me so much of like Harley Quinn and the Joker, you know, like the infamous scene in Mad Love where she's like in her lingerie and like wraps her arms around him. And I was like, why even like do that with, because it's even weirder with like the old guy and the teenager. Like,
it's so weird. It's so I felt so skeeved out watching that scene, and I'm just like, but there's no reason to do it. Like, you could easily set up this dynamic with her losing her parents at a young age, Deathstroke taking her under his wing. You could easily set it up with him being a surrogate father. You don't have to go into that territory.
And I don't know. I kind of feel like sometimes some of the animated films in the DC realm have made interesting choices, like The Killing Joke. I hate Batman and Barbara Gordon. Like, I hate it so much.
I don't know. Bruce Timm seems to have some sort of hang up with the idea of Batman and Batgirl. And I don't know what it is, but he's had this ever since he did Batman Beyond. And just like, he's got to see a therapist about it or something, because this just, it's weird. It's really weird.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. And like, I'm going a little bit off script, but like, is it just me or is Bruce Timm kind of being a little weird? Like, even his, like, what movie was it with, is it like Batman and Harley Quinn? Like, there's some weird dynamics in there, and I don't really know why he's so obsessed with the, I don't know.
I didn't even see that one. But I did see Gods and Monsters, the Justice League one he did, which I thought that was also a lot of weird choices in that, where I'm just like, I don't know why you're doing this.
And it hurts. Well, okay, I'll always be a big Bruce Timm fan, because you can't take away what he's done. Like, amazing animated shows, but his recent choices, like, I'm not gonna lie, like, I don't know that I can stand by them, because I think he's kind of exposing himself. Like,
I mean, you know what, you stay in the like, and you know, his art is still amazing. Like, his art influences my art a lot, and just so like, I love his style, he should stay out of the writing realm of it and just work on the visual side.
Yeah, and that's actually one thing I was thinking was like, the art, I kind of miss the simple like Bruce Timm art style. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I loved the animation style that they went with, like kind of what you were talking about like how I like that the other one movies were also like the comic books. And I think, I don't know, I don't really know what they're going for here, where it's like semi-realistic, but
yeah, like... we had covered Justice League War a few episodes back.
Did you like that movie?
It was okay, but it's also kind of the same issue I had where it's, and I think a big part of it is because it's they decided they're going to do this adaptation of the New 52. So they felt like they kind of wanted to go with this kind of animated version of Jim Lee's designs type of thing. Mm-hmm. But the problem is Jim Lee's art style doesn't really lend itself very well to that kind of animation. Just it's so hyper detailed and rendered, and it's really hard to translate that into animation.
Jim Lee's the one who makes all the guys really muscly and all the girls like really like tiny waist, right?
Yeah. He's definitely one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. That is an interesting choice. I don't know if I'm the biggest fan of Jim Lee's art in general, because I kind of sometimes feel like a lot of his characters look kind of similar to me.
It's a fair critique. Like, he was the big artist when I got into comics, so I've always got a soft spot for his art. There are definite legitimate criticisms of his art, and especially his costume designing. Like all the New 52 costumes with like all the added unnecessary seams and all that kind of stuff. That's all Jim Lee stuff.
Yeah. So I think the animation, it's not the worst, but we've seen DC do better.
Right. Well, I think even like, if you look at, Young Justice, I think is this nice kind of, it's this nice kind of blend where it's not as simplified as the Bruce Timm classic style, but it's not as like hyper detailed. It's got this nice little middle ground where it's still very clean. It's very smooth and it looks really well. But it gives you enough definition to differentiate between the characters. Because with Tim's style, as great as it is, the characters are all basically the same. Like if you swapped,
like the hair colors.
If you swapped the hair colors, or if you put like, Wonder Woman's outfit on, say, Black Canary's body, I don't think you would be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, that's very, very fair. I think Young Justice does a lot of things right, just in general. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of that show. They did have I haven't seen the newest season, but they also did have Tara on their show. Did you get that far?
I just finished The Outsiders seasons. That was season 3, and I've started watching a little bit of season 4. And yeah, I believe she's in that.
Oh, wait, so you haven't finished it?
No, I haven't finished. I haven't finished season 4 yet. I've only just started.
Oh, okay. Oh, I was gonna talk about it earlier when I was talking about Tara, so I'm so glad I didn't spoil it. Okay. But yeah, no, I think that like Young Justice is one of the examples of like how DC gets animation right. Mm-hmm. I think they still have it in them, but like, yeah, this movie had its ups and downs, I guess. Like, what would you give it out of 10?
Maybe a 7, 6 or 7, something like that. Yeah. Because it wasn't, like I said, it's not terrible, but there's so many ways that I think it could have been better. Although going with the, and also this is kind of another one of the disappointments of doing this intro scene, because, you've got Wally, you've got Roy in there, and I kind of found myself thinking like, I kind of want to see more of, adult Wally and adult Roy too, to see what's going on with them and how their interactions have changed. Because those are all two other characters that haven't really appeared much in a lot of other media as well. Well, Roy, he got a big showing on Arrow, I guess, but outside of Young Justice, it feels like a lot of places they don't really focus too much on them.
That's very fair. I like that I think they actually use the same voice actors as from Young Justice, which it was kind of confusing because the Roy on Young Justice is way angrier than the one that was in Judas contract. But I like that they, I always love hearing the familiar voice. Mm-hmm. But I do think that that is fair. And I think that's why, like you were saying, like a movie or a TV show would benefit the Teen Titans Judas Contract story a lot more, because you could even show like the old teams if you wanted to do different iterations of teams and like kind of establish what it is to be a Teen Titan. And you know, like I think there's a lot more that you could say, especially around like Dick Grayson. Like I feel like Teen Titans, one of the legacies of that team is like, you know, he's kind of growing up, like that's kind of where he transitions from being like, you know, Robin to being Nightwing and really making him on his own. And I think that you can really credit Teen Titans to like showing his like adulthood. You see him with his like with Starfire, which, you know, I myself credit as like helping him grow up and become this, you know, he's like this huge ladies guy and the,
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I think that's like, I would have loved to see more of that, because I love Dick Grayson. He's one of my favorite comic book characters, and I love Teen Titans. And I think that would have been a great like marriage there.
Well, speaking of that too, like I really like the design they went with. The elbow pad seemed a little bit weird, but other than that, I really like the design they did with for Dick Grayson's Robin costume. It's, you know, it's not the Speedos and the pixie boots.
You don't like the disco.
The disco collar when he was Nightwing. No. But it's a nice simplified design, right? It's modernized, but it still differentiates him from other Robins, right? It's still like a bright yellow cape and all that. It shows the contrast between him and Damian much better, because Damian's got like almost no yellow in his costume, or it's very muted when he does. So I thought that was I thought they did a really nice approach with that costume design.
I thought most of the costumes are actually pretty good. The one thing though that I remember thinking was weird was that Tara like shaves her head on the sides and like becomes like fully goth when she becomes evil, which I thought was way too on the nose. I was like, what? It's just comical.
I also think it's, and I'm not sure, I can't remember from the comics if this is from the based on the comic design, but it's also a weird little costume design where she's got a shirt with long sleeves and then she's wearing like these hot pants.
yeah I'm pretty sure that is pretty much taken exactly from like the 80s costume.
Okay, like that's another thing where, you know, you changed up Robin's costume, you could give Tara some pants, I think.
Yeah that would be a good addition. I'd be fine with that, but I don't really understand like the black lipstick and the emo look though when she turned evil. Like I like literally paused for a second. I was like, did they really decide to give her like piercings and stuff? Like it just seems so unnecessary.
And I liked I liked Starfire's design too. I thought that was a nice little update of the classic costume. Mm-hmm. And even though it's such a weird design choice to have a flying character with like it's not technically a mini skirt, but it just feels like such a weird choice when you give a flying character a skirt.
I think it's kind of weird with the like little boob window, like Power Girl, you know, infamously has that, and it doesn't really make sense. But you know, like I said, like it's Starfire, so I'll let it pass.
Yeah, I mean, it suits her character, I think, is more than anything else.
Yes, it's just like logistically, it's like that's a very interesting choice.
Right. Blue Beetle, again, that's another thing where it's, you've got this whole subplot involving his family, and I think this is another thing where we need to have another movie. I can't remember if there was a lot of this in the other Teen Titans movie that came before this. So it's been a while since I've seen that, but it feels like there's so much stuff in there that we're not really tapping into. And we're just kind of, and also I think it's also hampered by the fact that we're trying to squeeze all this in into like 80 minutes of time. And I think that would have been a case where you could have cut some stuff. I mean, I think you could probably cut Blue Beetle completely for this movie, because I don't think he really adds much to it.
I will say I do like the whole scene where he goes and helps at the, I think it was like a soup kitchen.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of weird that they had to have like it was like, I thought it was sweet that he was working at the soup kitchen, but then they also added in the aspect that there was some girl that he liked, which I guess there was like the comical payoff where he's like explaining, you know, like girls to his like scarab, so maybe that's why they put it in. But like I think it was a like extra too much, and also it kind of took away from like it being like, oh, it's sweet, like superheroes on their downtime also help. So it was interesting.
And also I don't like the new 52 costume for Nightwing, the red in it. I like the blue is just so classic. I don't know why you would go with the red design.
I think it like also like I like that Nightwing's costume with like the blue and the black is mm-hmm. like, you can see that, you know, Batman's influence is kind of there, but he also is kind of doing his own thing with the blue and the black. And it kind of looks like, you know, he has like the history doing like aerobics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and at the circus. So it makes sense. Like, it kind of looks like a costume that would almost be from there. So I like it, mm-hmm. but you can also see like the Batman aspects. So I love the blue and the black. That is just so classic. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't like what they did here with the, I don't like the red. Ever since they did that in the New 52, I was so disappointed. And when they finally brought back the blue, I was so happy. Really? Yeah. But also it's a nice, because I think it was one of Nightwing's creators said that, and when he transitioned to the Nightwing name, that mm-hmm. the name is actually a reference to the two biggest influences in his superhero life, and that's Batman and Superman. So you've got Batman with Night and Superman with Wing, and so like having the blue in there also helps to serve that, because it helps to connect him to Superman as well.
Oh, I didn't think of that. I do like that. I didn't even think of that. I kind of forget the Nightwing. Like, I didn't, until you brought it up, I was like, oh yeah, it is from Superman, which is like something that you do tend to forget. So it is, I love like little homages there. So that is a very good point.
Well, yeah, the name itself, like Nightwing was in, that was the identity way back in the Silver Age. That was whenever Superman would go into the Bottle City of Kandor with Jimmy Olsen, they had superhero identities that they'd adopt, and he'd be Nightwing. And I think, and Jimmy Olsen would be Flamebird or something like that. And then those later became Nightwing became Dick's identity, and then Flamebird became Betty Kane's identity in the
90s series. I kind of tend to forget that. But that is a good call out. And I think that like you kind of forget that sometimes I kind of forget that they all exist in the same thing. Not so much Batman and Superman, I guess, but like it is fun seeing all of the, I think that's why team, you know, movies are so fun, is like you get to see all these characters interact. But it is hard to do because you don't really always know who to bring in and who to take out.
Right.
That is sometimes worth.
Well, I mean, I think that you even see that with that opening scene, because I think they're like, okay, we want to have all these, we want to show this classic team of Titans. And then, and we get these interesting little interactions. Like we see Bumblebee there, but we get nothing about her at all.
Yeah. And she's a founding member, isn't she?
I don't know if she's a founding member, but I know she's been in a bunch of iterations, I believe.
Yeah. It was like blink and you miss it with her. Mm-hmm. But I did like their commentary where they're like, you know, like they're saving her because she's like pretty.
And yeah.
Like, you know, that's a good point. Like, that is a very, very good point. And they just like, they're like, ah, well, like, we'll just go for it. And they just got lucky.
Yeah. That was a good point. I thought she was making a really good point there. I'm like, yeah, that. Even though it's played for laughs, I'm just like, wait, that's actually pretty valid. You don't know if she's actually the supervillain here.
Yeah. How did they close the portal? I was kind of confused by that. I think it was like, he like shoots an arrow into it.
That was also a weird thing. I couldn't understand that either.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I was like missing something. I'm like, maybe I don't know all of his like trick arrows and there's like a portal closing line.
Yeah. It felt really weird. Like, it felt like we're going into Batman 66 territory using the magic arrow to close the portal.
Yeah. I was like, there's definitely easier ways you could have done that.
Yeah.
That's an interesting choice.
I don't know if there's much else I have to say about this movie. I think we kind of covered a lot. I mean, we didn't really talk too much about Brother Blood, but I think that's in part because, like you said, he's so one note in this movie.
Yeah, I think that like I don't really know why they went that route. I guess they just wanted a villain to like a big bad to have to fight at the end. But like I did kind of, what, how did you feel about the reporter thing where he like just kills him? I thought that was a little bit weird, but I don't know.
It's just another one of those things where it feels like that. It felt like they're trying too hard to make sure, you know, that this is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, we already kind of get it, but like the whole Brother Blood thing, I found myself kind of drifting during that and just kind of like, you know, gravitating towards my phone whenever he was on screen. Like there was nothing about that story that really kind of connected with me. And so, yeah, it didn't grab me at all. And I'm not sure if that's part of the original story or not, but it didn't do much for me.
I know that Deathstroke is working for somebody else. I don't remember if it is Brother Blood, actually. But yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I thought that it was like interesting though, like the fight was like very much like you could tell where it was going, where it was like, you know, he's like fully got the jump on them, like he's definitely gonna win. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, they like rally and then nothing's changed, but they just start beating him. And I'm like, very, very convenient to just like suddenly, you know, have like a boost of energy, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think all the fights were pretty good though. Like I will say, I like the Deathstroke and Nightwing fight. I thought that was pretty well done. I think sometimes like Nightwing doesn't get the respect that he deserves, and sometimes he loses fights a lot, and I'm like, no, like he's like supposed to be a great fighter. So I love that he was able to go toe to toe, you know, with like one of the best assassins who's is like very strong and, you know, superhuman speed or whatever. So that was
absolutely
great.
yeah I love that too. Anytime Nightwing gets his due, and I think this movie did do they did a really good job handling his character. And I found myself, anytime he was on screen, especially the scenes with him and Corey, like I was just completely in for all that stuff. And even though I don't really like this depiction of Damian, like you said, the scenes with him and Dick were very well done. And it made me wish that we would have had, like, because a lot of that relationship comes out of the fact that, you know, when Damian first became Robin, Bruce was dead and Dick was Batman. And that's how they developed their relationship. And I feel like that was touched on a little bit, kind of, in Bad Blood, but it didn't feel like it really got its due. Like, we never really got a truly proper Batman and Robin movie based off like the Morrison one, I think.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, so I'm not sure that I know like how well they, you're saying that they didn't cover it.
It was because there was the Batman Bad Blood movie, I think, when they had Dick take up the Batman mantle, but it was more it was like dividing its focus between Dick and Batwoman.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I didn't feel like they had ever really given the Dick Damian relationship the due it's deserved. Because I'm not sure if you ever read the Morrison Batman and Robin comic book.
Yeah, where, you know, Batman quote unquote dies and then he has to take over and then
right
and back in time or whatever.
Yeah, and then but when Dick Grayson takes over as Batman.
Yeah. I think that, like, I feel like some things, like, I don't know if the DC people know what hits home, but I think that that is a relationship that, you know, fans really resonate with. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I don't know that they know that.
A lot of times, a lot of the choices they've made with a lot of these things just make me kind of scratch my head. And some things, like, you know, I keep thinking, like, I would love to see, if you're going to adapt some of these classic stories, you know, why not adapt something like Crisis on Infinite Earths and do an animated version of that, or like Kingdom Come or something like that. And then they're like, here's, you know, Justice League versus the Fatal Five. I'm like, who wanted that?
There's like a Batman with like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
That one's actually a lot of fun.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Okay. And it is gonna... it's actually adapted from a comic too.
Oh, really? Okay.
There was like 3 volumes of the comic or something. Yeah. So it was that one. It was a weird choice, but it was fun. We actually covered that on the show. I think about like maybe last year or something, or 2 years ago.
Oh, I have to listen to that episode.
It's good. Yeah.
I know. I think some of them are like definitely like money grabs. Like they're like, okay, Batman's hot. Like Harley Quinn's hot. Like let's do a Batman and Harley Quinn, like movie, you know?
So I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of over the Harley Quinn overexposure too.
I think it depends. Cause I like, I don't know. True, have you seen the Harley Quinn show?
Yes. Yes. That is great. Yeah.
Yeah. I do really like the Harley Quinn show. I think that it's like, it's like the same issue that I kind of have with like the Joker.
Oh God. Yeah. I, you know, if we don't see a Joker in any sort of medium for 10 years, I think I'd be okay with that. Cause we've been just had way too much.
Because it's like Batman has the best rogues gallery, like maybe rivaled by like Spider-Man.
Right.
But like, you know, he's got so many great villains. And then it's like, how does he keep on breaking out of Arkham? Like, I wish that they really dedicated more time to like other villains, but like, I love Joker, you know, obviously he's like probably arguably the best villain, but you know, sometimes it's bad to have too much of a good thing.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, after Heath Ledger, I think they should have just put him on ice for like 10 years or something.
Yeah.
And, but instead we had to go with Jared Leto, and then, and then we had to get like Joaquin Phoenix. I was okay with, cause I'm just like, you know, he's not really the Joker. So it's, yeah, you know, it's a Joker type of thing is what I was looking at, yeah, with that. But then we had, you know, Barry Koenig in that scene in the Batman, which was a fun scene, but I'm still just like, do we really need this?
Yeah. I like that you like took a deep sigh before saying the name Jared Leto. He's been really, a lot of the DC actors are just kind of weird sometimes, mm-hmm, but yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, I like that they went with the Riddler for the Batman film.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Oh, Paul Dano was amazing in that.
Yeah, and Riddler is another character who I feel like doesn't get enough due. Like, he's supposed to be super smart, and then he's just like a meme. But,
well, I mean, also, know. I mean, you know, we haven't seen like a proper adaptation of Mr. Freeze yet either, in live action. That would be another one to go with, because yeah, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger is even though that movie is a lot of fun to watch, it's just, it's not really what I think of when I think of Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, like, has Hugo Strange really been in anything?
I think it's, no, he was in Gotham, yeah, and he was in the Arkham City game, but that was about it.
Yeah, like
he was another character that I thought that we, in fact, when they were talking about Nolan coming back for the third film, hope was what they would have brought in, like Hugo Strange. So I think that would have been something he could have really played around with.
I think he would have been a good character for him too. Absolutely, like, to play, yeah, around with. Isn't he like the first one to find out Bruce Wayne was Batman?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not 100% sure on the logistics of that, but I know that's like one of his claims to fame, is like discovering Batman's identity.
Yeah, so a lot of different like fun characters to play with, but yeah, he went with like actually way too many villains in that film.
Yeah, yeah, and didn't really give them their proper due when he did use them. But yeah, I think we're kind of getting off topic from Teen Titans. No, that's okay. It happens all the time on here. But one of the things I wanted to close up with is, because now this kind of shared universe thing has been kind of closed up in, because it ended with the Apocalypse War, and that, yeah, kind of closed the book on this universe. And I know they had the Justice Society with the Flash movie that came out. And also they had the, was it the Long Halloween movie with Jensen Ackles, yeah, as Batman?
Yeah.
So it seems like they're and that one ended with like the Justice League coming to his front door. So it feels like they're setting up kind of a new universe with that. So what would you like to see with the Teen Titans in this kind of new animated universe they're setting up?
I think that I would really want to see, like, it's hard because I think they're up against themselves, since they've already done the Teen Titans right, you know, with the TV show and with Young Justice. So I think like hitting on the aspects that they haven't really touched on before, like for example, like the whole Dick Grayson like finding his own in that show, but they don't really touch on it too much. You know, there's a jump skip in Young Justice. In Teen Titans, he's like barely acknowledged as, like, they kind of acknowledge Batman, but you know, not too much.
Right, so, right.
I think that would be something that I would really love to see. And like, I think the biggest thing is, I doubt that they'll do this because there's so many fun characters, but I want them to stick to one team and really get to know that team. Like the same, you know, stories have been played before. Like, I've seen Trigon like a million times, but really, like, cool things that you get to see. So hopefully a little bit more consistency, and I want them to take their time, but I'm not sure if I feel too optimistic with them doing that.
Well, I mean, one of the things that was teased at the end, which I thought would be interesting to explore, is, and I didn't really realize this until we got to that ending, and now that we're talking about it, as you know, Donna Troy appears at the end as a new character, but she hasn't gotten a whole lot of play. Like, in the live action Titan, she's you know, pretty prominent cast member, but
doesn't she like die? I saw the first season, and then the second one I like didn't
it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Okay, because I saw the scene and I was like, this is supposed to be like, you know, Wonder Woman's like sidekick.
So she's not a little bit of spoilers here, but she's not technically dead, so like there's a whole thing about it. Yeah,
okay. I'm behind then.
Yeah it's a whole thing. But you know what, something else I think I would love to see is, And this is something that doesn't get explored a lot, I feel, is mm-hmm. just the Young Justice team that started that name, the team from the 90s when you had like Tim Drake and Superboy and Impulse, and mm-hmm. you had Arrowette and the Cassie Sandsmark, Wonder Girl and Secret. No, I'd like to see a little bit more of that stuff and some of those characters.
Oh, that is a team that does not get very much love.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, we've seen Superboy, like Superboy's been great in Young Justice, but and in Titans 2 to a lesser extent, he was pretty good in that. But I found myself wishing that we could have seen, you know, but they're taking away some of the essential ingredients, which are his relationships with Impulse and Tim Drake. And I feel like that's something that we haven't seen explored.
Yeah, I think like one like quip that I have with like Young Justice and Justice League, which is like the TV shows, I mean, mm-hmm. like, it's like, you have like the season where you get to spend the time with the team and it's so, so good. And then the next season, they decide to do all of the characters, you know, Justice League Unlimited is like everybody. And they did it really, really well. Like, I loved getting to meet, like Question is mm-hmm. my favorite aspect of that show. But you know, like, I wish they would like I was saying, like slow down.
Yeah. That was one of my biggest complaints about season two of Young Justice, was they introduce all these second generation sidekick characters, but we never get to spend much time with any of them.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And like they have a gold mine of characters, so I don't envy, you know, their position. I'm sure the execs have a hard time figuring out who to choose. But I think we're kind of on the same track where it's like, if you know, you can probably choose there's a million combinations and they're probably all the right answer. So
I think part of the problem is just kind of the ages of the people who are creating this stuff and the target demographic and their ages now, because there's this kind of push and pull between the, you know, the people who are running the show, they grew up during like the Silver and Bronze Age. So they want to bring in the Teen Titans they knew. But there's also this push, this pull from what's currently happened in the comics to make it relevant to that. So they want to bring in, and then you've got this middle generation that kind of gets lost. And I think that happens a lot with a mm-hmm. lot of these 90s young heroes. Like this even happens in with the X-Men stuff. Like they kind of skip over a lot of the Generation X stuff. They kind of skip over the New Warrior stuff. And I think that's kind of a similar thing you see happening with DC, where you've got, you know, Barry Allen and Hal Jordan as Flash and Green Lantern, and you kind of forget about Wally West and Kyle Rayner and all that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, that's very fair. And I think another thing is like they'll like choose like the main heroes and then they'll realize like, oh wait, we have to bring in diversity, whether that's like LGBT or like, you know, like different like races. Right. And it's like I watched I'm thinking Stranger Things as I just saw that, but Doctor Strange mm-hmm. movie. And then like, this is a small spoiler, but like her moms are like gay. But like, so random. I'm like, mm-hmm. it's like, I don't know. Like, so I think that that's another thing too, where they'll decide to bring in some, I think that's like why they push certain characters like Blue Beetle, because they're saying like, oh, like we do have diversity. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it feels like a money grab there.
It feels a little bit too much like they're trying to tell me this character is a thing. Like I feel that a lot with Blue Beetle, and in Smallville even, and in this, and I'm just like, they're making me not really care about Blue Beetle by keep trying to tell me, you like Blue Beetle, don't you? Here he is. He's here. You like him.
Yeah, and I think that like I was thinking that was why they pushed him so much. And I think that if they're going to do Blue Beetle, they should really like dedicate more time by like, mm-hmm. you know, having less characters so that he can really get his time in the sun, I guess.
Right. I also kind of feel like because they've got Cyborg in the Justice League in this universe, that Blue Beetle almost kind of acts like a Cyborg stand-in a lot of the times.
Interesting.
Like in terms of like what he can do, his powers and all that kind of stuff. It feels like they're just kind of like leaning on to the kind of things you would have seen Cyborg do with like the cybernetic weaponry and all that. You have Blue Beetle doing that instead now.
Yeah. And it is also kind of like weird now because some of the sidekicks are like superheroes mm-hmm. now. So like that kind of does mess with, you know, some of the continuity from the source material they're taking from. So,
well, also, I mean, I think also seeing just like maybe some Nightwing solo projects even would be interesting.
I know they haven't done that.
No, they haven't. I mean, there's apparently a Nightwing movie in development, but it's been in development for like, you know, 5 years or something. So who knows?
Yeah, they haven't done Batgirl, or they haven't done a lot of.
Well, Batgirl's coming. That's coming on HBO Max, I think, either this year or next year.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Oh, they've released a still, or they've released some images from it already. Hey guys, Perry here. I just wanted to quickly jump in and let you know that obviously this was recorded before all the stuff with David Zaslav taking control of Discovery and Warner Brothers Discovery, and basically deciding to trash Batgirl for a tax break, essentially. So this episode was actually recorded at the beginning of July, but I've had so many that have been backlogged that it just took a while for it to get out. So the conversation you're about to hear about Batgirl is obviously several months out of date, but I decided to leave it in anyway because I think it goes to show just how much enthusiasm people had for this project and how much of a bummer it is what Zaslav did. Okay, so that's it. Just and back to the interview. And Michael Keaton's coming back as Batman in that.
Wow, I've been so behind. I think I just get hit with so many things. The thing that I was looking at was the new Sandman show.
I haven't watched. That's not out yet, is it? It's coming out next month, I think. Okay, yeah.
No,
yeah, it's coming
but I've out just August. Been looking at all the stills. I'm like, oh, like this looks cool.
But yeah, it's Leslie Grace is playing Batgirl in it. Looks like, okay, cool. J.K. Simmons is back as Commissioner Gordon too. So that's, and Brendan Fraser as Firefly.
Oh, fan favorite.
And also, you know, obviously, like I said, Michael Keaton is coming back as Batman too. So that's supposed to be coming out. Yeah, this year it's supposed to be coming out. It says scheduled to be released in sometime in 2022.
Wow, I'm excited for that. You know, I also wish that they had. This is way in the future, but like, I'm a huge Cassandra Cain fan.
Oh God, I don't even get me started on what they did with her in Birds of Prey. But
oh my gosh, no, I forgot about that. They could have named her anything.
I know.
I forgot they did that. That was actually a crime. Oh, my
way God. Back in like, I think like episode, like one of the early episodes we did, like episode 18 or 19 or something. Yeah. We talked about Birds of Prey, and I went on a whole rant about what they did with Cassandra and that.
That's so true. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that. I actually completely blocked that from my memory because I remember being angry about that because I love her so much.
I know. I had recently reread the comic because they came up with some trades of it. And right before I saw the movie, I reread those comics and I just fell in love with the character all over again. And then just seeing what's happened with her since, and just, and not only the movies, but also in the comics too. Like, she hasn't really gotten her due and she's such an amazing character.
I think the last I've really switched into anime, so I haven't been super in the comic book, you know, like universe, but I think the last I saw was with Batman Inc. I just saw like she kind of had a small, like, I guess, appearance, but I don't know what else they've done with her.
Yeah, she's gone through like a few different identities and stuff. Not sure exactly what she's up to now though, but yeah, that's another character that I found myself, there's not a whole lot of stuff about the late 90s, early 2000s that amazingly great about comics, but she's definitely one of those things.
Yeah, and for me, like, I mean, I guess people can't tell because this is my voice, but like, I'm Asian, right. So like, it's like cool seeing, like, I think that was the first thing where like it drew me to her, and then like, I think that's like an example of doing diversity well. Like, they don't mention that she's Asian, you know, like it's not like she's like reconnecting with her culture ever. She doesn't talk about it. She's just a cool character that happens to be part Asian, and I think that's an example of like really killing it with diversity. So I wish they would bring her back
more. They also avoided a lot of the stereotypes. Like, she wasn't like the, like a lot of times with, you know, female Asian characters in comics, there's the whole dragon lady sexpot stereotype thing, and they didn't do that with her.
Yeah, I feel like very much the opposite. Like, she just feels like a real character. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely love that. Yeah, okay. I'm so glad to know about that. Sorry, yeah.
No, that's fine. But yeah, Kenesha, thanks so much for coming on. I think, any final things to say about Judas Contract?
No, thank you so much for having me. Like, I love talking about comic books. I have so many things that I need to check out because I just haven't been really paying attention, I guess. But yeah, if anybody wants to follow me on Instagram, I guess, then you can follow me at Kenisha_Rose. So it's KENISHA_ROSE.
Okay.
So shout out for myself.
Okay, great. Yeah. And we'll have that link in the show notes too. Yeah. Thanks again for coming on. Anytime you want to come back on, you're more than welcome to.
Oh, thank you. I love that. Thanks.
Okay. All right. That does it for this episode of Superhero Cinephiles. SuperheroCinephiles.com is the website. Super Cinema Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And if you join our Patreon page, then you can also get these episodes a week in advance. And we've also got the Superhero Cinephiles Book Club companion podcast, where we do reviews of comic books, and you get that at any level, even $1 a month. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time. If you enjoy the Superhero Cinephiles, then you'll also love my companion podcast, the Superhero Cinephiles Book Club. All my Patreon subscribers get access to this exclusive podcast where I review superhero comics and graphic novels. Not sure what comics you want to read next or what you should dive into? I've got you covered on that. I'll be doing reviews, recommendations, and also talking to you about useful entry points if you're interested in reading some comics but don't know where you should start. Plus, you get access to all episodes of the main show a week before everyone else. On all of this for as little as just $1 a month. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/supercinemapod and you can sign up at any subscription amount to get started. Thanks so much for your support, and please don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening. And as always, good night, good evening, God bless.